Someone loses their job after 12 years, and the people around them say things like, "At least you'll find something better," or, "Everything happens for a reason." Someone goes through a divorce, and within weeks, there's an unspoken expectation that they should be moving on. Someone realizes, somewhere in their late 30s, that a version of the future they'd been quietly building toward, a certain career, a certain life, isn't going to happen. And in all three of these situations, something real has died. But there's no funeral, no ritual, no socially agreed-upon period where it's acceptable to just be sad, without justifying it, without a timeline for getting over it. I'm Andre Barbouras, and this is The Unlearning Project, a podcast from barbouras.com, where every couple of weeks we take one assumption that usually goes unexamined and we crack it open. Today's assumption is about grief itself, specifically the unspoken belief that grief belongs only to death, and that everything else we lose along the way doesn't quite qualify for the same emotional weight or the same social permission to process it. Let's start with a concept from psychology called disenfranchised grief. It's a term coined by Kenneth Doka, and it describes exactly this situation. Grief that isn't socially validated, because the loss itself isn't recognized as the kind of loss that's supposed to produce grief. The term was originally used to talk about things like the death of an ex-partner, or a miscarriage, or the loss of a pet, losses that are real, often devastating, but that don't come with the social infrastructure that surrounds, say, the death of a close family member. No one sends flowers. No one takes time off work for it. There's no ritual that marks it as significant. But the concept extends much further than that. And this is where it gets relevant to almost everyone, regardless of what's happened in their life recently. Disenfranchised grief also covers losses that aren't deaths at all. The loss of a job you'd built an identity around. The loss of a future you'd been quietly planning for, even if no one else knew the plan existed. The loss of a relationship that didn't end dramatically, just slowly faded. The loss of a version of yourself, someone healthier, someone more hopeful, someone who hadn't yet been worn down by a few difficult years. These are not small things. And yet, because none of them come with a body, a ceremony, or a recognized social category, they often get processed, or rather, not processed, in near silence. Here's why this matters more than it might initially seem to. Grief isn't just an emotion that happens to you when something is lost. Grief is, in many ways, the process by which a loss gets integrated. The mechanism through which your sense of identity, your expectations, your internal model of the world, gets updated to reflect a reality that has changed. When that process has social scaffolding around it, rituals, community, an agreed period where it's understood that you're in mourning, the integration has somewhere to happen. There's a structure for it. People around you adjust their expectations of you, at least for a while. You're given, implicitly, permission to not be okay. When a loss doesn't get that scaffolding, the grief doesn't disappear. It just loses its structure. And grief without structure tends to go one of two ways. It either gets suppressed, pushed down, postponed, often indefinitely, or it leaks out sideways, showing up as irritability, exhaustion, a kind of low-grade flatness that doesn't have an obvious cause, because the cause was never named as something worth grieving in the first place. Let's take the job loss example, because it's one of the clearest illustrations of this. In most professional cultures, the expected emotional arc after losing a job is something like brief disappointment, then pivot to action, update the resume, network, find the next thing. And there's nothing wrong with that arc. In itself, moving forward matters. But notice what's missing from it. There's no space in that arc for the fact that a job, especially a long one, is rarely just a job. It's a structure that organizes your time, your sense of competence, your social context, often a meaningful chunk of your identity. What do you do is one of the first things people ask for a reason. When that structure disappears, even if the reasons for it disappearing are external, a layoff, a restructuring, nothing to do with the person's performance, what's lost isn't just income. It's a framework the person had been living inside of, sometimes for years. But because the socially sanctioned response to job loss is find the next one, there's very little room to sit with what's actually been lost before moving on to what comes next. And so people often do exactly what's expected. They pivot, they search, they perform forward momentum, while underneath, something that hasn't been acknowledged at all is still sitting there, unprocessed. It doesn't go away just because the calendar moved on. This connects to something Bessel van der Kolk has written extensively about, the way the body holds on to experiences that the mind hasn't fully processed. Grief that doesn't get expressed doesn't simply evaporate because there was no ritual for it. It tends to get stored, sometimes as tension, sometimes as a kind of background vigilance, sometimes as a flatness that people describe as just not feeling like themselves without being able to point to why. The absence of a funeral doesn't mean the absence of a loss. It just means the loss has nowhere to go. Now, let's talk about a category of loss that might be the least acknowledged of all, the loss of an imagined future. This is a strange one, because there's no event you can point to, no single day where it happened. It's more of a gradual realization, the slow recognition that a particular version of your life, one you'd been orienting toward, perhaps without even fully articulating it, isn't going to happen. Maybe it's a career path that quietly closed off. Maybe it's a relationship or family structure you'd assumed would exist by a certain point and didn't. Maybe it's simply the realization that the person you thought you'd become by now, more settled, more arrived, more certain, isn't the person you actually are and may never be. There's no ritual for this at all. There's no social category for grieving a future that didn't happen, because by definition, nothing observable occurred. From the outside, nothing changed. You're still here, still functioning, still showing up. But internally, something has shifted. An imagined version of your life has quietly closed, and there's no acknowledgement process for that, not from others, and often not even from yourself. Because it can be hard to even name what's being grieved. It's not a person. It's not a job. It's a version of the future. And versions of the future don't get obituaries. I think this is part of why certain transitions, turning 40, a friend's wedding, when you'd expected your own life to look different by now, watching someone younger reach a milestone you'd once assumed would be yours, can produce a disproportionate emotional response that's hard to explain in the moment. It's not really about the specific event. It's that the event makes visible, briefly, a loss that's been sitting there unacknowledged, sometimes for years. So what do we do with all this? I don't think the answer is that we need formal rituals for every category of loss. That's probably not realistic, and it's not really how rituals work anyway. They emerge culturally, slowly. They're not designed on demand. But I think there's something useful in simply naming these losses as losses, even informally, even just to yourself, not to dramatize them and not to get stuck in them, but because naming a loss as a loss is often the first step in the process that grief is actually for, the process of updating, integrating, making room for what's actually true now, instead of carrying around an unacknowledged gap between the life you expected and the life you have. Here's what I'd like to leave you with. Think about whether there's something in your own life right now, something you've moved past, on the surface, pivoted from, adjusted to, that you've never actually allowed yourself to grieve. Not because you're not strong enough to handle it, but because nobody, including you, ever quite named it as something worth grieving in the first place. What would change if you did? That's it for this episode of the Unlearning Project. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one. Until then, be a little gentler with whatever you're quietly carrying.